You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. HRN is food radio supported by you. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
This episode is brought to you by Roberta's, home of Heritage Radio Network for 10 years. Learn more about Roberta's at robertaspizza.com.
Barryville is a hamlet in rural America, part of the Upper Delaware River Valley in the Western Catskills, but it could be anywhere. Barryville is the climax of civilization. Yeah, the Trump flags are flying, even as gay bikers are rolling through town. This is a hot take on rural America. And whether you're new to rural living, if you've ever been bullied or beaten up in the country, or live in the city and just dream of getting away, this show is for you.
Everything's better in Barryville.
Imagine what better Barryville would say if they could say, dancing to your own song, John. I love it.
You know what? I have to say, it's kind of one of my favorite songs I've ever recorded. I love the damn song. And for the record, you know, my producer that I've worked with for a while, he mixed this thing for us. And he also turned down Beyonce, not knowing it was Beyonce. So I feel very honored that Kevin, DJ Ambivalent,
did. He also left me on the cutting room floor, dude.
What was the? It had to start my solo career somehow, you know. And I know. I'm sorry, you were a casualty.
I can't believe we said let's form a band, and the first thing you do is make a solo record.
Well,
I mean, it was
I took a page from the Bee Gees,
unprecedented with speed and alacrity that you went into business for yourself, as we say in the wrestling business.
Oh my God! Oh my God! So it's almost the weekend. What are you doing this weekend,
well,
Mike?
Well, I'll tell you what I'm doing here in Barryville. Actually, I'm going to truck up the road to Narrowsburg to our friend Annie Stanley's place, the Smoky Bells Homestead. Her queer
I love Annie.
Retreat.
I have to tell you, Annie's brought so many amazing superstars up here. She's had La Tigre at the Smoky Bells. Like, she does all these cool things. I've hiked the property. It's a beautiful, beautiful spot.
It is all this weekend. She's hosting me. I'm going to bring my guitar and play by campfire along with our friends, the Basic Bitches. And
Basic Bitches. No the.
Right on. Basic Bitches. Get out my red pen and do that little curly
I just
thing.
Did it for you. All right. Moving on.
All right. With Basic Bitches, our pals Crystal and Naomi, who we're going to see. They have a new record coming out. We're going to see them very soon. But we're going to be playing at a campfire at a chili cook-off this year, of which I am also...
Did someone say chili?
...as also a judge. Listen, last year I was an entrant in this chili cook-off, and the voting was rigged. It was a hoax. It was a hoax. It was the biggest hoax. It was a scandalous chili cook-off. So this year, I'm going to be a judge.
You're going to be a judge.
I'm going to be a judge. And it's not unprecedented. I have judged several chili cook-offs in the past. I did one at the Pig Island event on Governor's Island. I did a goat barbecue contest. I was a judge when I was working with Heritage Foods in Charleston, North Carolina. And doesn't your sister-in-law have a goat initiative happening?
Yeah, you know, I asked her about it if they had a website yet. But yeah, during the last hurricane down in Merle's Inlet, the Goat Island, which was like a real sort of like a, you know, landmark down there, was washed away. And so she's trying to bring it back and bring the goats back. And, you know, we'll let you know about it. We'll keep you in the fold.
Wait, I've got my own studio audience machine now.
You
watch
know
out.
What? But maybe they traveled up from Merle's Inlet to the town of Highland.
Well, I'm very excited about the chili cook-off and playing at a campfire.
I'm excited for you guys.
That's my kind of gig. I gotta be honest with you. That's absolutely the kind of gig I love. You can play in nightclub anytime, but when do you get to play at a campfire at the Smoky Bells Homestead? That's a dream come true. You know what's a good gig? The Mini Saint Battlefield, the Haunted Battlefield, which once upon a time I was blessed enough by Deb Conway asked me to play there.
Those star makers are going to be on the show today.
That's right. We got Deborah and John Conway.
So excited. And I'm so excited about our next musical guest, Vanessa Carlton, Milford Zone. It's so exciting that she's going to be here today and talk to everybody about how to basically make it, you know, coming from a small town.
How to be a star. I can't believe we've been making Barryville better since 2023. We'll be right back after this.
Love y'all.
Everything's better in Barryville. Everything's better in Barryville.
All right, and we're back. Crazy Daisy. I'm having a good time, John. Are you ready to introduce our next guest?
I would gladly introduce our next guest. These two are not only my neighbors, but they are the heart and soul of history In Sullivan County and beyond, I give you Deb Conway, who is the town co-historian, town of Highland, and John Conway, who is the county historian for 20 years in the making, as well as the president of the board of the Delaware Company and the executive director of the Delaware Company is Deb Conway.
And my favorite newspaper columnist and author of many books, let's not forget.
From the front porch, it's the Conways!
All right, you got that hit again.
Yeah, that's a double. We don't usually give doubles, but we gave you guys a double.
We have a lot of fans out there.
Thank you guys so much for coming. And, we talked to Vanessa earlier, and she mentioned that my studio audience sounded like a popcorn machine.
Well, that's what happens when you buy your special effects at PEX.
Well,
that's what goes on. So how are you guys today?
Terrific. All right. Here.
I'm with you guys. How bad could it be?
Oh, my God. Something very exciting. And so you guys are both Sullivan County natives, but you're not Sullivan County, or you're not Town of Highland locals, but you will inform the locals on their history, which I think is so fabulous. So, Deb, you grew up in Liberty, correct?
I did indeed.
And you also, this is a little history lesson for all of you and a little tidbit, Deb attended Woodstock. And my favorite story is how you got back and forth from your job to Woodstock, and you were at Grossinger's at the time, correct?
No, I lived near Grossinger's.
Okay.
I was working for the telephone company in Monticello.
Okay.
And I had already bought tickets like weeks in advance. I was one of the schmucks, the early ones who actually paid to get in. But that weekend I was assigned split shifts. So that meant that I had time in the middle of the day. So we were there for the opening on Friday night, got in via back roads that I knew from Liberty through Jeffersonville, Canosa Lake, and that way. When it started to rain, I went back home because I had to go to work the next day and left in the afternoon and went back again. So I was in and out, very, very easily. So I am the non-story about the traffic backup. I had
no
problem.
So you could have prevented this traffic.
It's all my fault. It's always all my fault.
Well, I'm glad you paid to get in. I'm glad to know that our town historian isn't some scofflaw hippie.
No, and I still have the framed tickets.
Well, let's talk. I had them for a little bit on display. We had a little a little hippie show down at the Bang Bang Bar, and we had Deb's tickets. But, John, so you grew up in Monticello.
I did not attend Woodstock.
And I was going to say,
this proud might, of it, apparently.
This might proudly be the, did not attend.
The conservative voice you were looking for.
I didn't even know there was a Woodstock.
Really?
No, that's not exactly true.
But I've heard stories from different people in town. I know that the Reavers, for instance, boarded up the windows and were like, the hippies are coming, the hippies are coming. Was that sentiment sort of out there for you, at least, John, or no?
There was none of that.
Okay, all right.
In fact, my dad had a gas station on Broadway in Monticello, which it was the way everyone got to White Lake. So, the stereotypical Volkswagen van, which, has become kind of a cliche, really. But that's really, there were a parade of them coming in. But I will tell you a funny story. For weeks leading up to the festival, people would come in and say, how do we get to Woodstock? And, not being a music person at all, I was much more interested in the New York Mets and their run to the pennant that year. I literally gave people directions to Woodstock in Ulster County. I had no idea.
Drive straight through the park.
What was happening.
It's a much nicer drive.
So it wasn't until we began to see things in the newspaper that I realized, I guess I sent people a little bit out of their way. And I guess in hindsight, when you look at the history of the festival and how Woodstock, New York capitalized on their non-role in the whole thing. It's really kind of funny.
I want to know something. How did you guys develop the Delaware Company? How did the Delaware Company come to pass? Because it's such an institution it does so many fabulous things, and everybody I think is like, whoa, where's this coming from? The weather balloons. But so where and how did you guys start this fabulous organization?
So we go back to 2012, and Deborah at that time was the directorate for Delaware, which of course was owned and operated by Sullivan County. And being a part of county government meant that every year, through no one's fault, but whenever there was a budget crunch for Delaware and the Sullivan County Museum and a lot of the other amenities that the county operates would come under threat of closure, and they were always struggling financially. And so we began a conversation to start a friends group for the fort. But Deborah and I had a vision that it could be something much bigger than that. And we thought, you know, there are a lot of historic venues in the county that really struggle financially and could benefit from a friends group. And that's really how the Delaware Company started in November of 2012, as kind of a friends group of historic sites in the county, with Fort Delaware as our main focus. And then we continued to grow from there.
Yeah.
You know, I love what you're doing, and I loved in the last blast that you were doing the revolution to revolution concept, which I guess ties into the Woodstock experience and everything else you're doing.
Yeah, it absolutely does. And revolution to revolution dates back to those earliest days. We just recently, in fact, in October of last year, we got a registered trademark for the concept of revolution to revolution. But it dates back to 2012 when we first began to develop the ideas for the Delaware Company. And it celebrates the region's role in the American Revolution and the role that it played in the Cultural Revolution of the 60s, which is told so well at the museum at Bethel Woods. And we just think it's a natural way to promote the county, tourism in the county.
Yeah, no, it's super exciting, and it's one of those like legs of history, or you know, of the richness of this area that some people don't know. So it's really fabulous that you guys are bringing it to the forefront. And Minisink Battleground has also been entrusted to you guys and the Delaware Company to run from the county. So what are the challenges there?
Well, that is our link to the Revolutionary War, and yeah, for years the county has done very little at the battleground. In the process of reinstating a series of trail markers that were there. But I wanted to just interject one point before we talk about the battleground. On the revolution to revolution concept, a couple of years ago, Deborah got the idea that there was a third revolution that probably should be incorporated into that. And that's the story of the Kate Project and the D&H Canal and the role it played in the Industrial Revolution, which it really fueled in New York City. So, I mean, literally fueled it, and Deborah can talk more.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're a soothsayer, because that was my next question for Deborah, is, you know, everybody keeps hearing this buzzy Kate Project. Tell us about the Kate Project and how it relates to the Delaware River.
Well, it's...
I know that's loaded for a historian, but do the best you can.
Okay. Well, as we know, the Delaware and Hudson Canal floated through here, through Berryville, coming across the Roebling Bridge. And the canal boats were towed by teams of oxen or horses or mules or some combination thereof. But usually leading them were young children who mostly were very young children, orphans from New York City.
Off the Bowery, right?
Well, yeah, or out of the orphanages, many overcrowded with Irish, particularly immigrants, all kinds of dark sides of, you know, the way the women were treated, the domestics who came here to work from Ireland. And then they were so overcrowded that at one point there was a minister who actively tried to place them with nice families upstate, good Christian families. So many of them ended up in this area or with families from this area, who many of whom already were canal boat owners. And they would press these kids into service. And sometimes they were loved and treated as family, and sometimes they were just treated as another set of hands to help out. So they would get up early in the morning. They would groom and feed the mules. They would, you know, tack them up. And then they would walk 18 miles a day until the end of the day, where they would do all of that again with the animals long after the grown-ups were in the bar or doing whatever. So these little guys were called hoggies. We're not exactly sure the derivation of that, but... they were their own little story that has never been told about the Delaware and Hudson Canal. It's a phenomenal story for many reasons, financial reasons, engineering reasons, but the Hoggies were the untold underbelly. So I got the idea that we should do some kind of an homage to the Hockeys.
Yeah.
And so I saw that the Erie Canal Museum in Syracuse has a statue there of a young boy, Hockey. And I thought, oh, this is what we need here, but I want a little girl. It kind of evolved from there that I got prices on how to, from that sculptor who's now in Australia. And I realized that this was going to be extremely expensive, so I wanted to take it in phases. And we're going to build a trail, a hiking trail, along the former towpath, and eventually we'll have a statue there.
That's great. And you know what? We have to take a quick break, but we'll be back more with
more
the
revolution.
Delaware Company, more with the Conways, more revolution to revolution, and we'll be right back.
Johnny, you said you wanted a revolution.
You say you want a revolution.
You're listening to Everything's Better in Berryville on the Heritage Radio Network, also available on berryvilleradio.com and Radio Catskill WJFF. Everything's better.
All right, and back.
We cannot keep the studio audience quiet today. They are really losing their minds.
Well, we got two esteemed historians. Very sexy.
Yes, here we go. All right, one question I forgot to ask you before our break. Can you tell me, who is Kate? Why is it called the Kate Project?
Well, it's not a short story, but it's kind of a joke. It's the daughter of our friend Heather Jaxey, who I shared my vision with after a seminar that the Upper Delaware Scenic Byway had held with this famous planner named Ed McMahon. And he was confirming everything that I had come up with in my head, what I wanted to do. And one of the suggestions of other projects that he had was for towns to tell their own story. What's the soul of this place? What sets this apart from any other town in USA, where every McDonald's is the same, every whatever? And one of the ways to raise money was his suggestion. One town did a history mural of the town, but they sold spaces so that you could have your face put in there. So the actual mayor of the village was characterized in this historic mural as the mayor. So as I'm telling Heather this story, she said, okay, how much is it going to cost me for Kate to be the model?
I want this.
Yeah, I'm sure Mike wants to put himself in a tree corn hat and claim stake to founding Berryville because they won't let him in as a local.
I think that portrait of Tony Soprano, that could be us.
Or Tony La Russa for the right price. Here we go.
I wanted to say, you know, when we first got to Berryville, when Christine, my wife, and I first got to Berryville, Deb, you were one of the first people we met down at the farmer's market, and you know, it was a big crush on first sight, and you kind of volunteered us to work the voter registration table, which made us really part of the community, and we met so many people. And then later, I started working at the farmer's market, volunteering over there. John came down to our Back to the Garden series in period costume and spoke eloquently and wonderfully about the American Revolution in Berryville. So I want to thank you guys for making us feel so welcome. You are my first connection, and I do connect so much to the Revolution.
But you were the best latkes in town.
Yeah, you already put yourself on the
What's not to love?
That's very
good. Nice.
That's my own personal revolution. Speaking of latkes, I knew this just speaking to you. You had a Borscht Belt twang. I mean, I think I said to you. So, Deb, what was your last name before it was Conway?
Conway
Steen.
And you said, I know from Yiddish.
And I do. You know, growing up in Liberty, and I hate to say it like this, but most of my friends were Jewish.
Yeah.
Or
I have a black neighbor.
Yeah. But in this case,
I have a gay coworker.
See, exactly. Exactly.
Who ironically is the best straight man I ever had.
But all of my family grew up working in the hotels, particularly Grossinger's. We lived at the base of the hill. My one grandfather, when he came, was Jenny Grossinger's private chauffeur.
Wow.
In fact, we just recently came across his license. I had always heard, and ironically, it was my mother who told me this story, not my father, whose son this was, that he had changed his name to sound more Jewish so he would fit in with the other Jews. Now, every other Jew in America was making it more anglicized. Instead of being Nicholas Sosluski, because he was born on Christmas, on his chauffeur license, it said Abe Sosluski.
I love it. I love it. I know, but
fantastic.
But how fabulous. I mean, because this was like this was the sort of Jewish Riviera, you know, at that time. And this was the place where people could be comfortable. And I love the idea of this sort of like, you know, this like ostracized group really feeling at home and people wanting to aspire to assimilate with that group, you know, with said group. It's pretty fabulous.
I'm looking forward to our Borscht Belt show.
Yeah, but this is not the Borscht Belt. John, can you tell us, like, this is not the Borscht Belt, correct?
No.
Like,
No, in fact, you know, as the historian, that's one of the things, one of the battles that we fight is the Borscht Belt has an incredible cachet and for some reason, which we could explain if we had a 2-hour show, It's just gotten very popular now, but the Borscht Belt was a tiny sliver in time and space in Sullivan County history, and really it was a very central part of Sullivan County that was primarily that area served by the O&W Railway that developed into the Borscht Belt. But the Borscht Belt existed for a very short time, and I would argue, and you know, this is something that we go back and forth with whenever historians talk, that the heyday of Sullivan County and the heyday of places like Grossinger's and the Concord and the Laurels and all the large hotels, really Kutcher's, came about well after the Borscht Belt was passé. It was after the restrictions had broken down and the hotels had become, you know, much less restrictive about who they would cater to. And so the days of the Christian and Jewish resorts being totally separate had passed.
And they got so much more fun when everybody was involved. I mean, if you look at it, like
did.
The program.
You know, Grossinger's would tell you that during their heyday, fully one-third of their guests were not Jewish at all. But the Borscht Belt nickname was something the hotel owners ran from for years. They didn't want to be associated with the Borscht Belt. But now, all of a sudden, I think because we have a new generation who are hearing stories from their grandparents about this great place where they used to vacation and how charming and quaint it was. The stigma of the Borscht Belt has been erased, and these kids have no such preconceptions, and they're anxious to come back and to hear more and to see the places. And, you know, we have all these abandoned hotels here or hotel sites that just lend themselves to great stories. And
it's very sad how it's all falling apart. You know, it's the whole ruins of the thing. My father brought me up to, I've been to the Concord and Grossinger's, and I think the Neverly too, when I was young. But this is what a divorced Jewish dad does with his new girlfriend to try to impress his kids.
And to impress his girlfriend.
Yeah, well, in 1970.
Which is probably more important.
Yeah, it was a nightmare. My idea, eating in a room with 500 Jews is not my idea of a party.
Speak for yourself.
It was pretty awful, but I do love looking at the history, and you see who played at these hotels, and it's not just Henny Youngman and Jewish comedians, and, you know, of course, Lenny Bruce was up here, but Frank Sinatra was here, and Fats Domino was here, and all the big bands were here, and whoever the pop stars of the day, meaning the late 50s and the early 60s, they all came up here. It really was a mecca. Sinatra was up here. You know, Dean Martin was here. I mean, it was incredible when you just sort of look at who came through here. It's amazing.
Dionne Warwick talked about, like, how this was one of her favorite gigs, which is mind-blowing. Sure. I mean, the woman sang Bacharach all over the world, you know?
But, you know, I would argue, Johnny and Mike, that a much more interesting part of our entertainment history was pre-television, when those stars who became well-known through this new medium actually worked on the staffs of the hotels for $10 or $15 a week, room and board, and they actually learned how to entertain guests by working 24/7 on the staffs of these hotels. So you had people like Henny Youngman, Red Buttons, Danny Kaye. You know, these guys were staples on the, and believe it or not, Van Johnson got his start here in Sullivan County. Shelley Winters, you know,
they talk
pretty
about,
much anyone.
Yeah, I Deb and I were going back and forth with that Netflix Kutcher's documentary that was so fabulous, you know, and they talk about Shelley Winters coming to town and sort of, you know, her experience here, but it's all just so fascinating and exciting. But let it be known that this was not the Borscht Belt over here. There was other things going on over here. There was a big, on the flip side of the coin, there was a big German development here in town, which is known as Black Forest. You know, this was, but that's not where you guys grew up. You guys were more closer to the Borscht Belt. So this was a new experience.
But, you know, they had a great tourism industry here, too. And unlike the other parts of Sullivan County, it didn't make that transition to the Jewish resort area that the rest of the county did. And it maintained a very different kind of tourism, which was based on natural beauty and sports and recreation.
I got to say, living here, I feel, though, I am in some sort of Bermuda Quadrangle, I guess, between the Roebling Bridge and the history there and on the river and the Minnesink Battleground and the site of the Bethel, you know, Bethel, the original Woodstock concert, and the Borscht Belt.
Right,
there's
exactly.
So much surrounding me that I'm directly have been influenced by my entire life, and somehow this is where I landed. This is where I planted my flag.
But it can also give you a split personality. Think about being the historian who's got to walk in all of those different worlds.
I got to tell you, when we moved up here and we're looking at the town of Highland, website, we were sort of, you know, looking around, said, oh, look, there's a town historian. We've got to meet her. That's who I want to hang out with, the town historian.
Yeah,
and now look where we are.
Yeah. No, that's
you're hanging in.
Dreams can come true. I was just a boy with a dream.
Well, yeah. You know, one week, or last week, it was shrimp cocktail he wanted on the menu at Baker's. He got
And so, boom.
Yeah. But let's not give him everything. You know, I've been here 17 years, and I've got very few things I want.
I'm moving the dial.
And apparently you moved it with Conrad's, too, because I see that was on their menu yesterday the day before.
Oh, the shrimp cocktail revolution.
The third revolution has now begun.
Which, by the way, you know, there was a major upheaval when the Laurels, which was at one time the largest hotel in Sullivan County, put lobster on its menu. So shrimp cocktail was not something you'd find at a Borscht Belt hotel.
But every suburban Jew I knew growing up loved shrimp and lobster. It was sort of some sort of weird exception.
Well, and interestingly, the one food I think that's most identified with the Borscht Belt today by this new generation is the RPG, roast pork and garlic bread. And, and of course, obviously, most Jews back then would only eat roast pork and garlic bread on the sly.
That was definitely a no in my house growing up, roast pork.
Well, no one ate it in their house. I don't think anyone ate RPG in their house.
Yeah, that was definitely...
But it's a thing, you're right. I'm seeing it on more like deli menus and things like that. People are pumped about it again.
But, you know, but like my parents would order like Cantonese shrimp or lobster Cantonese or something like this to get their shrimp and lobster intake in some sort of way that was acceptable to this middle-class Jewish aesthetic.
Can I ask you guys something? You know, we feel it a little bit, you know, because we're definitively a river community over here. Has there always been this sort of like tug-of-war or push and pull with the east versus the western side
absolutely.
Of the county?
Oh, absolutely. God, yeah.
Yeah, and we call it the Continental Divide. You know, and there are people who grew up in the Monticello, Liberty, Fallsburg area who literally believe that, you know, if you make that left-hand turn off of 17B onto 55, you're going to fall off the edge of the world.
You're
you know,
on a road to nowhere.
Deb loves to tell the story that many years ago when I had my bookstore in Barrieville, we had a customer who came out from Monticello and said, wow, I never thought, you know, I'd be out here. It takes a really special kind of person to live way out here.
And may I add that very day there was a drive-by shooting near her house.
Yeah.
So, like, weird.
Aren't you glad you didn't stay home today, honey?
Yeah. Well, I'm glad I'm here. I'm glad you guys are here.
Well, thank you. Listen, I have to say to you guys, thank you so much for bringing the richness and the history to the area and reminding people about how great it's always been to be here. So thank you guys very much for all that you do for our community.
And again, thank you personally so much for making me feel welcome here in Barrieville.
Latkes. I'm in it for the latkes.
I'm in it for the jokes.
You know, our history is our greatest treasure, so if we don't publicize it, we're really just hoarding it. So what good does it do anyone?
And then we'll never learn anything either, correct? That's from our mistakes. So where can people find out more about the Delaware Company?
Website, thedelawarecompany.org. We've got tabs on there for Fort Delaware, for the Menacing Battleground. We try to keep up to date with events that are coming up, but we haven't refreshed it yet for 2023 events, but we'll be on there shortly. So just go to the website or our Facebook page, The Delaware Company. We're also Fort Delaware Museum.
Great.
On Facebook.
Great. And definitely, if you haven't yet, please go out and visit Fort Delaware this season. It's such a phenomenal place and very, very inspiring. And it makes for a great party venue.
Saturday, May 27th.
Yes. All right. Saturday, the 27th is the opening of Fort Delaware. We leave you with the Conways. Thank you so much for coming out tonight.
Everything's better in Barrieville.
You can say that again, brother.
Everything's
thank you. I knew that was coming because he has Borscht Belt level humor. Here we go.
All right. We're getting to the Borscht Belt thing. Every segment's going to start with me saying, so a guy goes to the doctor. Be ready for it. Oh.
This episode is brought to you by Roberta's, home of Heritage Radio Network for 10 years. Roberta's was founded in Bushwick in 2008 and has become one of the most iconic restaurants in the country. HRN made its home inside of Roberta's in 2009, and together they have become part of the DIY fabric of the neighborhood. Roberta's, the pizza restaurant, is open for lunch and dinner 7 days a week and serves much more than just the famous wood-fired pizzas. Their team dreams up new salads, pastas, and sandwiches on the regular. Roberta's Tiki Bar is alive and well in the back garden, serving up frozen drinks in the summer and hot toddies in the winter. Stop by the bakery and takeout spot next door for fresh breads, sticky buns, and pizzas to go. But Roberta's also extends beyond Bushwick, with multiple locations in New York City and now in Los Angeles. You can also find their frozen pies in grocery stores around the country. The spirit of Roberta's, like Heritage Radio Network, is everywhere. Here's to many more years of pizza-powered radio. Learn more about Roberta's at robertaspizza.com.
Oh, man, I meant to ask Deb and John if I need to wear a period costume to get a gig at the Fort Delaware.
It could only help. I will tell you that, because those two make period clothing look so good. You know, they're not your, you know, your grandma's felt sort of historic society. Those two have authenticity attached to their cause.
You know, Deb did invite me. It was my first really great community gig up here to sing a song. I sang this lament, a beautiful war lament. Johnny Gone Home a Soldier at the haunted battlefield. I sang for some ghosts and some local politicians, and I thought I was going to be Lou Gehrig into this gig. The girl that usually did it, like, had a kickball game or something she had to go to, so, you know. So she calls in sick, I show up. The idea is now I get the gig until I call in sick. That's how it worked with the Iron Horse, you know. Lou Gehrig, she was the Wally Pipp. No one remembers who Wally Pipp was.
Yeah, sorry, this is over my head.
Yeah, well, you know, don't forget Lou Gehrig was not the first string baseman, you know, the first baseman for the New York Yankees. He was on the bench until the guy that was the regular called in sick, and 1,400 games later, I'm still singing at Mini Sink Battlefield. All right, John, you ready for the news?
I'm ready for the news.
All right, let's do it to it. Here we go. Here's your host, John Pizzolatto.
I'm John Pizzolatto, and this is the news to me. New York City is suing the state over the foie gras law that's been passed, banning foie gras sales and basically putting it on the menu in New York City. But it's a big revenue stream up here for the one big foie gras farm that's still left up here. And it's a very diabolical sort of story that's covered in the Democrat today. You know, while foie gras is a economic boost for Sullivan County, it's also, well, A, delicious, but B, it's also very cruel to the animals that they sort of produce it from. So I don't know where I stand on this, because, you know, I was a vegan, and then I was a pescatarian, and then I got Lyme disease, and our own Lorraine Spinard, our kinesiologist over in Chihola, told me that I should be eating meat, and now I can't turn back. And I love all kinds of meat, and I love foie gras. And but I also do think it's cruel, and I do think that if there's a sort of ethical conversation to be had, and New York City is saying we want to be ethical, we don't want to abuse these animals, and, you know, for delicacies, I just don't know where to put it.
Well, you said it. On the one hand, unbelievably inhumane and cruel, and on the other, delicious. Especially with a little brandy ignited over it, a little flambé.
Stop!
Oh my God!
Don't romanticize it. You said brandy.
But I do believe in raising animals the most humane way possible. I try not to buy anything from big agriculture if I possibly can. I do not buy chicken that says Purdue or Smithfield on it. I buy it from our local farmers at the Berryville Farmers Market. I buy meat there. I had worked with Heritage Foods USA for a long time. You know that. And
where does Heritage stand on the foie gras?
Yeah, like on its neck, you know?
Got it.
Because the Heritage principle, I mean, is to raise animals humanely using old grazing on pasture. The turkeys that sell get to roost and walk around. They're not...
That sounds like a call from the top. Like Patrick.
The pigs aren't swimming in their own effluence and pouring a sea of pig shit into, like, North Carolina.
So
I mean,
before we were, you know, on Heritage or whatever, I ordered a bird, a turkey,
for Thanksgiving because birds were sold out at our local farmer's market. And so I get this Heritage paperwork, basically, when you get the turkey, and it tells you the community college courses that they've accomplished, you know, like the turkey's IQ, but it's like, you know, the story of a West Virginia fleet of black turkeys that blah, 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 blah. But it's like, that, to me, ethically sourced food is very, very important. It becomes part of you and your soul. So I really, you know, church is out on this foie gras thing. I don't know what to do with it.
Well, you know, we don't live in a utopia where everything is going to, you know, come from this pain-free environment. So into your life, a little foie gras may fall, and I'm not going to judge you for it. You know, so I mean, I prefer to eat, you know, pork that comes from like humanely farmed. Patrick is keeping in business all these independently owned family farms for many years in the face of big agriculture. I always support that. But when I, you know, go down the road to get my bacon, egg, and cheese, it came from a very cruel environment. So I get that, you know, and yet I love it.
Yeah. Also in the news, you were going to tell me something from the pages plucked from the River Reporter astrology.
They're busting out with an astrology feature this week, and the headline is fittingly astrology, why? And that is actually my question, but here it is. Here is the why. This is written by Mark Schulgasser, and he tells us what astrology is and why it works and what it doesn't. Are you ready for this? In a nutshell, it's a diachronic ontology of evolutionary neuroastrology.
What? Can you please rewind? That is the most insane sentence. One more time. Go ahead.
It makes me yearn for the simplicity, the Robert Frost-like simplicity of It's Winter. It's a diachronic ontology of evolutionary neuroastrology, and that gets a hit.
Maybe astrology is not for this guy, but I do yourselves a favor. Maybe skip this article and go to Astrology Zone. You know, the most wonderful, wonderful astrology is, you know, Miller of Astrology Zone. She's amazing. If you want a depressing astrology, go to Sally Brompton, who hates Scorpios, and she's like, "Hey, Scorpio, you're still an asshole. Money's going to come your way on Friday."
Astrological ontological.
What does the River Reporter have against astrology?
It's actually a pro astrology story, but who would know it? Because I'm, you know, John, it's a wise man who rules the stars. All right, you know what?
I actually have a sad story, which I'm sure everybody knows by now. Raquel Welch is dead.
This was a really a big blow to, you know, my entire view of the world. I mean, since I was a little kid, she is the first va-va-voom girl. You know, I mean, she made it move. I mean, we used to go to a movie theater, the Menlo Park Cinema, where they showed movies for little kids on Saturday afternoons, like $1 to show those movies. They always showed the same movies over again, and they were a little bit outdated, but they were great. And one they always showed was Fantastic Voyage. And,
wow.
And it was just like, holy cow, this is just amazing. And of course, if anyone's seen Fantastic Voyage from 1966, and the movie was already 10 years old when I went to see it, but it's like, you know, it's...
I watched it with my step-grandfather, and I never saw any sort of stabs at his masculinity.
Oh my God, when
we were watching that
1
film.
1 million BC, holy cow. And even when she was voicing the character, Shelley Millstone on the Flintstones, the one that really killed us was Kansas City Bomber. She played a roller derby queen. Oh my God.
She was always the face of sexy grace. Like, she really... Boom. She was the original cougar in some way. For me, at least, you know... Kind of her 80s imaging, you know. She was always just like, the cougar, babe.
Yeah. You know, I'm so old that all my older women fantasies are about women 20 years younger than me. but Raquel Welch was like absolutely the it girl and a class act from top to bottom. What is that?
Whoa. Speaking of va-va-voom.
Speaking of class acts.
Wow. What's that in the sky?
I believe it's the eye in the sky. I believe it's the Barryville radio traffic helicopter. Tiffany Diamond, are you there?
There goes our budget.
Tiffany, can you hear us?
Hey, guys. It's another beautiful day here in Barryville. The sun is shining. It's 50 degrees. Everyone has spring fever, but don't buy it. It's fake news. Get ready, because this fake spring is going to be followed by winter 2.0, and then another spring tease, and then the winter of our discontent, then the mud season. We might not even see real spring until it gets to be summer. You know what they say, March comes in like a lion and goes out like a lamb. Well, not in Sullivan County. March comes like in like a lion and goes out like a feral cat. And over in Orange County, March comes in like a German shepherd and goes out like a labradoodle. But in Ulster County, March comes in like an overly aggressive real estate agent. And
hey, Tiffany.
Sorry, I can't hear you. The helicopter's too loud. Remember, everybody, watch out for falling rocks on Hawk's Nest, and be careful, there's a lot of winter to go. Okay, over and out for Tiffany Diamond in the Berryville Radio Helicopter.
All right. Wow. Who knew that Tiffany was not only a trafficologist, but a weatherologist to boot? All right, we'll be right back with Vanessa Carlton right after this.
Everything's better in Berryville.
All right. We are back with a very exciting next musical guest who is from right over the bridge from Berryville, right here in close by Shohola. It is Vanessa Carlton.
What's up?
All right.
How are you doing, doll? What's going on?
That is so funny. Is that clapping or is it popcorn?
It's the studio audience, Vanessa.
So adorable. I'm loving this.
Studio audience,
I'm good. How are you?
We're great. Where are you right now in the world? I know you're getting ready for your new tour.
I'm in Rhode Island.
Oh, wow. That's right. So that's where you... So post-pandemic, you went up to Rhode Island, right? Like, that's where you were moving to.
Exactly. So, yeah, the last year, like 2020 and 2021, I was living in Berryville with my family, and my daughter was going to the Homestead School, and I was a substitute teacher. It was amazing. And then we found a house sort of near our families because they both left. My husband's from Providence and my parents now live in Mass. So here we are in Warwick, Rhode Island.
That's so exciting. Mike is burning to ask you a couple questions because he's been doing a lot of research. So I'm gonna let him take it away. And then I have a bunch of questions to ask you about growing up in Shohola. But Mike, take it away.
Well, I can't help but say that one thing we have in common is we both dropped out of Columbia University. A nice school, but maybe not the best place for an artist to spend 4 years.
Did you do that too? Yeah. It's an honor.
I was let out for time served, basically.
I think you guys are in a good class, though, because there's been lots of successful Columbia dropouts.
Barack Obama? No, he finished.
Oh, yeah, he did finish. Never mind. But others.
He also became the president of the United States.
Yeah, there's a plethora. See, if you would have finished, guys, you'd be the president and vice president right now.
Well, I did want to say, though, Vanessa, I'm so admirous of you because having a hit record and having a music career in America can be such a short-lived profession, but you've persevered, you keep at it. 20 years later, you're back on the road. I know you've had lots of obstacles. You've dealt with some difficult producers. You're raising a family. So I think it's amazing what you're doing. I'm totally a fan. I'm totally 100% impressed.
Well, it's an honor to be a dropout with you, and thank you so much for the kind words of support. My friend.
Yeah. So, Vanessa, I wanted to ask you, what was it like, you know, growing up in Shohola and then putting out an amazing hit single when you were in your teens? I mean, like, what a life change. And I'm just thinking about all the kids that are, you know, growing up around here. What if one of them just sailed into superstardom in their teens? What did that feel like? What was that like? And how did you get there?
Well, you know, it's so funny. I just love the idea of, like, any other kid growing up in Shohola or Berryville or whatever, Milford area, Milford, Pennsylvania, it's like, I love the idea that you actually can, if you have a crazy dream, there's a chance, like maybe you can make it happen. Like I love that where I'm from and that I can tell that story, because even though it's really hard and it's, I feel like I'm just very lucky. I loved to be able to, you know, I don't know, inspire another young creative in the area to just like go for it, you know.
Well, I'm older than you and you're inspirational to me. So maybe one day I will.
I'm much, much, much older and I'm finding inspiration.
So no, but what was it like? I'm sure you were always a performer and songwriter and things, but how did you turn what was your passion into your career at such a young age?
So, well, I was studying ballet sort of like really obsessively and intensely. And I moved to New York when I was just turning 14 to study at the School of American Ballet. And, you know, New York City is not far from where we are. So it was just like, I just really wanted to live in New York, like really badly. And so I studied at that school for many years. And then I just started writing. You know, as you know, my mom is Heidi Carlton, School of Music, piano teacher extraordinaire, legend from Milford, Pennsylvania.
I love it. No, that's so, it's, you guys are like such a family of musical wizards. It's incredible.
She's left her mark on, I think, a lot of kids who are now, you know, grown in the area. She's taught piano to so many. But so when I was studying ballet in New York, and then I was really sort of disillusioned by that that world, especially in the 90s. It was really, it's hard. And so I started escaping and sort of skipping my classes and started writing songs, like songs with lyrics when I was about 16, 15, in my dorm room in New York. And that's how I started writing my first record. And then I was waitressing. I was doing some shows. And I just got really lucky because my dad passed along a cassette tape to Ahmet Erdogan. He was able to get it into his hands, and he's one of these big time, you know, he's called the godfather of the music industry.
Yeah, that's not casual.
Yeah. So the same guy discovered Ray Charles?
Not to say that that was the end, like the beginning or whatever. Like that was that opened some doors for me, but you know, it's always one challenge after the next challenge. It's like, it's really a test to see how much stamina you have, I think, in any creative world. It's like, because nothing is always just going to, nothing just miraculously goes your way. You know, it's like, you just keep moving forward and have an amazing support system, and then you'll survive. Maybe you'll survive it.
Well, I think it's amazing, and that's exactly what I was getting to. I mean, the hurdles, the obstacles for having a music career in America in the 21st century, I mean, it's incredible. And I'm looking at your tour dates. The Future Pain Tour begins on March 1st, an evening with Vanessa Carlton, and you're going to be playing in New York City, Philadelphia, and I guess you're going all the way out to the West Coast. I see Chicago, Cincinnati, Nashville, Atlanta, New Orleans, the home of the blues, and San Francisco and California. That's exciting.
When's the last time you were out on the road?
I was touring with opening the Stevie Nicks tour last fall, which was amazing. However, my first time headlining a tour was 5 years ago. So I have not done my own show like this since the pandemic. And I am just so excited. I'm bringing a brilliant cellist. It's going to be keys, cello, two voices. I have all these pedals to make just kind of like psychedelic, vibey, sort of beautiful, different sounds to just add to, just rearrange a lot of the songs in a way that's like sort of compelling in a new way. Sort of inspired by the Nirvana Unplugged stuff. I love so many Nirvana songs. And then you hear it sort of turned on its side and you're like, huh, I can't believe that's the same song. Wow.
You know,
so I'm hoping to create a cool experience for people.
I have to tell you a very funny story. So when I was a professional musician, you know, like we were a touring band. It was not, you know, we had a distribution deal, but not a record deal, et cetera, et cetera. But a very different story. You say Nirvana and I say Butch Vig, which is so funny. My mom ended up like working, you know, at my cousin's like radio in car installation business or something. And so she gave Butch Vig, who is like this famous producer who's in Garbage and, you know, produced the Nirvana Nevermind album. She just gave him our demo tape and it was a much different story. He said, why don't you guys just fly here and I'll mix your album for you. That's it. But we had to pay. So it's a much different story.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Those kind of moments are really huge. And, I think that they're not always going to happen. And I, you know what, honestly, I always feel like if you can survive the drop off, like if you have any sort of like splashy moment, right? Because artists' lives are forever. Like you're always going to be an artist no matter what. Even if you're going to be, you could have a 9-to-5 job, you can do whatever. You're always an artist at heart. So like if you have some splashy thing that happens just surrounding the success of your artwork, and then you have a drop off, you know, where it's like, wait, oh, now maybe this next thing and the people are in that, and you can survive that and you just build resilience in that moment. And you come back after that, you're going to be, you'll have a career forever. That's always what I see in people. It's like, survive your quote unquote failures and you got this, you know?
100% fantastic and true. And no joke that there are a lot of one hit wonders now working the graveyard shift at Wawa. Hey, you said you were opening for Stevie Nicks. Did I read that Stevie Nicks officiated your wedding?
She did. She's
what?
Can you think of a better person to host a ritual?
Oh my God! So witchy and cool. That is the coolest thing in the entire planet. And Mom, Mike, you really did do your research. But Vanessa, I never knew that, and that's really, really incredible.
I think she's our good luck charm because John and I we're still married and we really enjoy it. And we're gonna approach our 10-year anniversary. But I will tell you this: we did not have a wedding. That's a mistake. We did not want a wedding. We had like a ritual. It was just us. We had no family or friends. Like it was just, we just wanted to do something very, private, I guess. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, that's phenomenal.
Well, I tell you what, John, I think we should go see Vanessa. I think we should, Everything's in Barryville field trip and go,
City Winery.
And go see the Vanessa Carlton.
No, I went with the folks at Bethel Woods to, see Constantine Morales who the board, are friends with, and he plays at Bethel Woods. And I was so excited because in the middle of the show, it flashed coming March 1st to, City Winery, Vanessa Carlton. It was so exciting. But how many dates are you doing in New York?
Yeah. I would love for you guys to come. I'm doing 2 dates. I think they're both sold out.
Okay.
But I'm not sure, but just check because anyone from the area who wants to come out. Oh my God. I just feel, it's just so wonderful to be in the same room with old friends or old community members. And it's, in a time like this too, it's so healing and feels so good to just share in music, just be in the same room with other people playing music. It's just, I don't know about you guys, but to share in our humanity, and that's all I want to be doing right now.
It's a big deal.
I can't watch the news. So, yeah. I have to start my rehearsal.
So, hey, Johnny, we can always slum it and go to one of the Pennsylvania dates. But Vanessa, before you go, we're going to play a song for everybody in Barryville and beyond. What song are we going to hear?
You want to play? Well, it's up to you guys. You want to play something from my new record? I released a record in 2020. Worst time ever to release a record, but it's there. And the name of the album is Love Is an Art, so it's up to you guys.
I love the title track, but what other song do we
No, let's go with Love Is an Art. But Vanessa, will you promise next time you're back in town, you'll come up and come to the Barryville studio and play with us in person?
Of course.
Please. Please, please, please. Well, thank you. Thank you so much for your time today. Ladies and gentlemen, Vanessa Carlton, thank you so much for everything. Have a great tour. Happy trails. Enjoy.
And we'll see you on one side of the river or the other.
Everything's better in Barryville.
Roses to the garden.
straight out of Milford. It's Vanessa Carlton. Can you dig it?
She's like a perfect 10. She's gracious, she's lovely, she's inspiring, and she's got a hell of a voice, and she's a great writer.
And her message is amazing. Do not quit. Keep at it. You know, there are so many hurdles, especially in the music business. My God, pop music star has got to be the shortest-lived profession.
Well, yeah, and being self-made and just kind of being self-produced and self-funded, all those things that she is.
And all the things.
She deserves all the acclaim.
All the things that have been thrown at her, every single obstacle, and she's still here doing it. Let that be a lesson to you all. Listen, hey, thanks, everybody, for a great show.
Before we go on a more somber and sobering note, Alan Edward Murphy, better known as Al of Berryville, has passed away. He originally grew up around the Port Jervis area, and he is father to Aaron Murphy Nelson, and father-in-law to obviously Matt Nelson. And the Nelson clan are such an important part of Berryville and the history of Berryville. And Al was, you know, a loving father and grandfather and husband to our friend Sue Murphy. So our heart goes out to them. I just wanted to read a little passage that was on Aaron's Facebook because it's just so sweet and it so sums up a beautiful father-daughter relationship. Her post starts, "Dad, MacGyver, the Police Academy, Abbott and Costello, saltine crackers with a slice of cheddar, cheese, and ketchup, the nicotine smell on your sweaty palms, as we held hands walking to church, skipping out right after communion to golf, where you could give me a Coke and some Snickers and then let me drive the cart. I know you needed to go, but I'll miss you forever, Dad." So I love those guys, and my heart goes out to them, but I know they'll see the light in all of it. So thank you so much, and the show is dedicated to Al.
That was really very, very beautiful. Matt and Aaron are such lovely people, and they make Berryville better. And thanks, John, for reading that.
Yeah, of course. Listen, we love you all, and have a great day, and take a little time to enjoy each other.
All right. Love you all. See ya.
Bye-bye.
I'm going where the sun keeps shining.
This show is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. Keep in touch at heritageradionetwork.org/subscribe.